This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And not only are we on WRKF, which carries its signal through most of South Louisiana at 89.3 today, we're also being simulcast by WWNO in New Orleans, 89.9. So together, those two stations cover much of the state. And this is the part of the state that has been hammered by Hurricane Ida. And New Orleans is still pretty much in the dark, with a few exceptions. There's a sliver in New Orleans East that has regained power. And at last report, 58% of the homes in Baton Rouge are without power. And we're going to talk in a moment with Pat Shingleton, the longtime forecaster, meteorologist at WBRZ. And, of course, those of us of a certain vintage remember him at WAFB. This is the first big storm he's been on the sidelines for, and he has a few things to say about Hurricane Ida. As we know, in New Orleans right now, it's a treacherous time, and it could get worse if power is out for an extended period, as it appears it will. Paul Mawson, the station manager at WWNO and also WRKF, says that drive-through water and MREs are available 8 to 6 today. 6 o'clock today, you can go to Joe Brown Park, 5475 Reed, and Mahalia Jackson Theater, 1451 Basin Street. That's Joe Brown Park, 5475 Reed, and Mahalia Jackson Theater, 1451 Basin Street. And your number for our show is 877-217-5757, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org if you would prefer to send an email. On September 1st, the 13th anniversary, by the way, of a big storm in Baton Rouge, Hurricane Gustav. Pat Shingleton, you remember that one well, don't you?
Worst one that ever hit us, but gosh, Jim, with so much being off, it's good to be on with you.
It's good to have you here, and I'm sure a part of you, maybe more than a small part of you, the other night was thinking, like an old soldier, I want to be on the battlefield.
It's, when you look back, I guess it was 16 years ago for Katrina, 13 years ago for Gustav.
Right.
And Gustav, unquestionably, at that time, was the worst storm that ever hit. Remember the amount of timber it knocked down. I remember Kip Holden and Walter Monsoor were at the helm for that one, and they set up those tree and wood mitigation areas over there on Phil Witter's property. And they were still chopping, grinding, and cutting wood all the way into the end of October.
Isn't that something? Well,
it was a horrible storm.
It was, and this one was bad, but not as bad as it could have been. And most of the forecasters were calling for it to be worse. And these people know what they're doing. They just don't do this on the fly. But we got a break, didn't we?
I believe so. I think that from my perspective, and it was strange, it was a little bit weird, you know, being at home. And, you know, you're there watching, and I was doing some flipping, catching some other stations, including my friend Bruce Katz down at Channel 8 in New Orleans. But when you have I'm going to be surprised if they don't go back and relook at this, Jim, at landfall, that if it wasn't a 5, but apparently came in as a 4.
A high 4.
Yes, and it held on to Category 2 status for 90-plus miles, just an absolutely massive power storm. And I'm not sure. I've watching and didn't get a chance to visit with Josh Aegis on it, but to hold on to that status, anything to the eastern flank of that storm was obviously going to be ravaged. And that certainly occurred in Livingston, Tangipo Parish, St. Helena to Ascension, Assumption, St. James, St. John, of course, into New Orleans. It was just, they did everything they could after Katrina, I believe, to rebuild, prepare, pumps, all that stuff. And here they are again, just absolutely ravaged by this one.
At least the levees held.
Yes.
$14 billion in taxpayer money that was needed and certainly helped the cause. And we had that move to the right that spared Baton Rouge the worst of it. Hurricane Betsy, 1965, still the record as far as winds clocked in Baton Rouge, 92 miles per hour. But this one was one, as you stated, it was a big storm, and it didn't get through here efficiently. It hung around for a while, and that incessant pounding over a course of 2 or 3 hours it can make a huge difference.
Yeah, and I think when you go back and look at Gustav, it was the track on that took it a little bit to the west of Baton Rouge. And once again, more further evidence, you're on the right side, the eastern flank of that thing, you're going to get pounded. And we did. So we replicated probably the power outages, too, that lasted in some locations in the city up to 2 to 2.5 mm-hmm. weeks. But I get the feeling that Entergy and Clico and all the other ones, they're really, really getting after it to try as best they can to get that power back on.
We're going to hear from Foster Campbell in a bit, but you were around for the storms other than the brief tenure in Pittsburgh for the 80s and the 90s. You probably remember Hurricane Freddie. I remember Woody Dumas saying, "We're ready for Freddie."
Yes.
That was when I was in college.
Sure.
But we were commenting before going on the air about people of a certain vintage. In 10 days, we'll have the 20th anniversary of 9/11.
Yes.
And for somebody who was born at the turn of the century, they've been through some stuff.
Oh, gosh. A friend, Dr. Darlene Namath, always references resilience. But if you go back and you look at what the kids experienced after Katrina, and I can remember years ago, Jim, there was a conference that was held in New Orleans. And they were talking about the reference to the cereal bowl effect. What would happen if the storm took Lake Pontchartrain, Mississippi River, and the Gulf of Mexico and dumped it into New Orleans? What exactly would happen with Katrina? And this was, back in maybe the 80s. I raised my hand. I said, look, I'm in Baton Rouge handling weather there. And we're about 60 miles to the west. What's your opinion for Baton Rouge? And the gentleman moderating says, you're going to absorb about 400,000 people within about a week's period of time, which has occurred. We became the distribution site to get those folks over. So the kids go through that. They go through 9/11, maybe kids that are 9, 10 years of age. They go through Katrina. They go through the Great Flood, where, as you and I talked before, here's this low-pressure system that's parked up in Natchez. It throws down a column of water for a 25-hour period that never occurred before in the United States until that hurricane, I think it was Mike or something, went over to Houston. This just absolutely put a ton of water, as we know. They go through that. They go through Gustav. They go through Isaac. And here they are. It's, you know, and the kids today, they just kind of shrug and said, we got this. We know what to do.
In the middle of a pandemic.
Yes. And then you bring that into play as well. Gee whiz.
Yeah.
They've been through so much.
And some people are in close proximity to each other by necessity right now. In New Orleans today, we hear stories of people using swimming pool water to bathe in.
Yep.
And to
flush toilets if possible.
Exactly, if possible, yeah. It is a horrid time, and it is one of those cases in which not everybody can get out of Dodge.
No.
Some people don't have the luxury of getting out, and as we saw, it's an amazing phenomenon, though. You talk about herd mentality. I was out on the interstate over the weekend, and during the day it was bumper to bumper.
Yeah.
But at 2 o'clock at night, you could have gotten on the road then and cruised right on in. But most people, they want to be with they want to be with others. It's
sure.
a shared experience, but there's some danger in doing that.
Gosh, that's an interesting concept. Yeah, but you know, you look back too from the standpoint that I can remember after Katrina. I was over serving Mass with Father Vic Messina. And he said, Pat, you got to remember one thing. People are tied to the land. You know, they are tied to their home, to their land, and where mm-hmm. they're from. And that's a perfect example of what's going on with Louisiana. You know, you experience, you're out of power. You don't have the same lifestyle that you've had prior to the storm. But then thereabouts or thereafter, you know, you just try as best you can to get back in the groove.
Here's one from Tom on Blue Bonnet saying that Katrina was largely a water event, and it mm-hmm. caused a lot of speculation about who was responsible when insurance came. This was mainly a wind event.
Similar to Gustav, it was a wind event, and you're noticing that too in a lot of neighborhoods with tremendous amount of trees being down. Unfortunately, trees falling on homes, on roadways, but we had one right in our neighborhood. A tree came down and Friend across the street had a chainsaw. We were out there just getting after it, you know?
Being a good neighbor.
Got to.
But I'm sure there was a part of you that wanted to be at the station, and it's a little – now you see what others go through when
yes.
they're counting on people like you to yeah. provide information.
You read my mind. It was a different perspective for me. It was a comfort zone for my wife, and God love her. She went through every storm that I covered. Oh, gosh, going back to 1982, 81. So – Michael was born in 85, Katie 88, so she made it fun. She had some flashlights and maybe a lantern or some candles or whatnot. I'd try to get back and check on them, you know, and then tried, but that's the reason for generators.
We'll spend some more time with Pat Shingleton. Your number is 877-217-5757, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, and we're pleased that we're not only broadcasting on WRKF through much of South Central Louisiana, but also today on WWNO. There obviously are issues with power in the great city of New Orleans, a crown jewel of our state, and there is much work to be done to bring us back from the wrath of Hurricane Ida. With us for a little bit longer is Pat Shingleton, the longtime weather forecaster, meteorologist, WBRZ Channel 2 for much of his career. Spent 40 years or more, actually more than 40, on the air. Did have a brief hiatus in Pittsburgh near his home turf, but came back home to where he is a fixture in Baton Rouge. And 7 months ago, he called it a career, I think, on the 29th. So it was exactly 7 months when Hurricane Ida came through on the anniversary of Katrina. There is time to get in if you'd like to talk with him, 877-217-5757. Please be brief in your comments. Randy and Zachary. Randy, you're on with Pat Shingleton. Good morning.
Yes, I was just going back in time there in 1957 when Audrey hit Cameron mm-hmm. and how devastating it was and the extreme loss of life. And people need to be mindful of that these things are very dangerous.
Audrey's one.
Yep.
Even precedes me, even before I was born, but that was a big one that is remembered, and it was an early storm.
Correct.
You know, most of them yeah. today, they come in last week of August, first week of September.
It was like in clock. June, wasn't
I
it?
I think it was in June, yeah.
Amazing thing, Jim, is the reference points that people have for Audrey, Camille, and Betsy. And I can remember when I was WAFB, I was able to hook up and go with the hurricane hunters out of Keesler Air Force Base on two occasions in their flights. It'd penetrate an eye wall, get in there and take a look at it. And we did that. I think it was Babe. But we also did a story on a guy. Camille was the one that went through Biloxi, I believe.
Yeah, it sideswiped New Orleans.
Correct.
And that was one also that was feared to be a direct hit of New Orleans. Yeah. But at the last moment, it veered. And just crush Mississippi.
Yeah. And a guy built what he believed was a hurricane-proof house. And a photographer and I went down, and we did a story on this. I did an hour special. I think we called it Your Last Warning. And we went in, talked to people that were aware of this house. He builds this house, had a big hurricane party, and my gosh, after that storm came in, they were taking bodies out of trees. I mean, it just, he had it mm-hmm. reinforced with steel and whatnot. So there was always that mindset of the hurricane party, you know, treating it so unfortunately lightly that many people lost their lives in that regard. But I believe over these many years where you had Betsy and Camille and those storms, folks here can certainly remember 1992 and what happened with Andrew.
Yep.
That particular storm. I was short one person at the station, so we were on the air probably going on 23, 24 hours. And I can remember standing outside with John Spain watching the tower sway. guy,
really?
Oh, yeah, the guy wires and John Pastrick. But the in coming home and checking on, we were totally off the air. Power was totally out. So I went to check on the family, and, gosh, when I got there, Maven and the kids were, it looked like matchsticks on Cyril Avenue where we lived. So We couldn't get out of the driveway. I climbed over the back fence and went up. And we have a 47 Mack fire truck that we use for the parade. That was our only means to get around.
Well, we will take one inquiry about something unrelated to Haida, but you mentioned the parade, and Pat is the St. Patty's Day parade. He's the guy who started it, his namesake, St. Patrick. I went to St. Patrick's grade school, by the way, in North Little Rock. We used to get my March 17th off for school. But what's the status of the parade?
You know, I just don't know. I think that we're in preparation for it. I think if Kenilworth was able to have theirs, and now you've got LSU football season coming up, and if you're putting 60 or 70,000 people into a stadium and another 70,000 outside from 7 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock at night, I'm responsible for that parade route from 6 a.m. in the morning till 2 in the afternoon. So there's things that I want to try to do to incorporate a safe parade. And we're advancing those.
Well,
and,
you're optimistic it'll happen in 2022?
Yeah, I think that conversations with Sharon when we first met, it was 4 days before we were able to put it on the street, and I met with her, and she said, Pat, we just can't do it. And I said, Mayor, I'm glad you made the decision because I would have made the same decision. But we're going to get through this storm. We're going to see how the COVID consequences are going to play out, come in through October, November, and we'll see what we can do.
877-217-5757 for Talk Louisiana. David, a New Orleans transplant in Atlanta. Good morning, David.
Yes. You know, human-caused climate change is undeniable, verifiable, and provable. Anyone who doesn't believe it or accept it is not worth having a conversation with. So when Trump runs for president, he says climate change is a Chinese hoax. As President Trump did everything he could to develop and produce more fossil fuels, including relaxing regulations, releasing the super greenhouse gas into the atmosphere.
All right. Well, obviously, President Trump is gone, probably gone forever. But decisions by many, including the Trump administration, probably have contributed to what we're facing right now. And as we look at the future, Pat, these storms could get faster and furious, and we can argue all day about what the culprit is, but obviously something's going on in the environment that is contributing to this.
There's 7 billion people on the planet. You know, and if you just look at it from the standpoint, in my opinion, of 7 billion cars, you know, there's a lot of dynamics there that we could probably go on for a long time here to discuss all of that. But the fact of the matter is, I take the position that when the National Hurricane Center comes out and predicts that there's going to be 14 or 17 or 18 named storms in a given season, I just don't – when I was on the air, I just couldn't get my head around that. It only takes one. It only took one Camille, one Betsy, one Andrew, one Gustav, one Katrina – and if the incidence of these storms is increasing exponentially due to environment, then there isn't a whole lot that we can do at this stage to prevent that other than to prepare. And we're right on the bullseye. I mean, you know, you look at the Gulf of Mexico and you take it all the way from the Keys to Apalachicola, west of Brownsville, Texas, Corpus Christi, Port Arthur, from Lake Charles to New Orleans. Baton Rouge in Louisiana is right in the bullseye. Consequently, first time ever last year, 5 storms hit a single state for the first time ever, and it was the great state of Louisiana.
When Betsy hit Baton Rouge in 1965, packing 92-mile-per-hour gusts, there were a lot more wetlands, too.
Yes.
It took longer to get here.
That's right.
Today, if a storm of that force happened, it probably would be a much more intense storm.
Yep.
And some say it's a matter of time. It could happen next month. It could happen later this month. Who knows when it'll happen?
Yeah, and, you know, in that regard, too, Jim, you commend the people that are doing so much to try to save and improve the wetlands for a multitude of reasons. You commend the people that are also attempting as well to create safety mechanisms and measures to protect people in all types of things. how do you justify, too, what's going on in the western part of the United States with the fires? You know,
Lake Tahoe right now, as I heard this morning, potentially could be obliterated because of wildfires. Isn't that something?
Yes, and there again, you know, do you check that off as once again an environmental concern, or do you look to the fact that, you know, there was an effort there to remove a lot of brush to be able to get in there and clear. A lot of these trees regenerate due to fire. So, I mean, there's so many different dynamics going on that
Well, you are one of the favorite sons of Baton Rouge, even though you were not born here. You've raised your family. Your son, Michael, is doing fine work at WBRZ. And Pat Shingleton is truly a Baton Rouge and Louisiana treasure. And we'll be calling on you again soon.
Anytime you need me, Jim. Even though everything's off, it's good to be on with you, as I mentioned
nice
earlier.
Nice to see you,
great
as always.
Fella. Thank you.
Great to visit with Foster Campbell in just a few minutes as well. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We're joined now by Foster Campbell, one of the most venerable politicians in North America. And I think we may have temporarily lost contact with Commissioner Campbell, but Londra Villarreal is doing her best to get back in touch with this fine gentleman who was elected to the Louisiana Senate in the year of 1975. And then 27 years into his odyssey as a state lawmaker, he opted to run against a very popular incumbent in North Louisiana, Don Owen, former anchorman in Shreveport. And in a race for the ages that went to the wire with a runoff, Foster Campbell clipped Don Owen in a very close race, and he's been a member of the PSC now for almost 19 years. So Foster L. Campbell, Jr., is one of the longest-serving politicians, if you will, elected in 1975 and still with us 46 years later. His area in north-central Louisiana was largely unaffected by this, I mean, in a huge way, not like New Orleans, not like Baton Rouge, but Foster Campbell is a guy who gets calls from constituents and from people who are concerned citizens throughout the state, and he is at your service. I'd like to talk with him right now. 877-217-5757. Good morning, Commissioner Campbell.
Good morning, Jim. I wish it was a brighter day for Louisiana, especially down where you are and the people, our friends down in New Orleans and Plaquemines and St. Bernard, St. Helena. All those parishes are having terrible problems, and my heart goes out to them. People in North Louisiana are heartbroken about this thing as we see it on television, not like living in it, but we are Louisiana people and we care about the folks in South Louisiana like they always help us when we have ice storms up here. People in South Louisiana help us, so we want to do everything we can to help. We are Louisiana people, and we are troubled and saddened by what's going on down there. I can't imagine what's happening in some of those parishes, Lafourche Parish, Terrebonne Parish, it's terrible, terrible.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org for Foster Campbell. Bill in North Louisiana writes, you have taken ExxonMobil to task for concealing knowledge of climate change and the role of burning fossil fuels. We know, writes Bill, that as early as the 1960s, electric companies like Entergy knew that using oil, gas, and coal for electric power would heat up our climate, make our weather more extreme, and make the electric grid more vulnerable. Should Entergy, asks Bill in North Louisiana, and the other utilities in Louisiana be held accountable for concealing any knowledge of climate change and not acting on that knowledge?
Well, I today's not a good day to blame anybody. Today's a day to help the people. There's probably plenty of blame to go around, but I can say this. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I have been talking about it for almost 20 years about losing our coast. And when we had barrier islands out there, they kept the storm out in the sea, you know what I mean? And kept some protection for us, but we've lost those for many reasons. But I don't think today is a good day to blame anybody. It's just try to help everybody get back to normal. But I can tell you that we are doing everything. I've been a big proponent of wind power and solar power, and I think that's going to help us in the future. Maybe we can build some of these solar plants closer to our cities, where maybe we can be able to get electricity closer rather than having it further away. And I don't know. It's a problem. But Louisiana is moving. You know, we're not just an energy state. They talk about oil and gas. We are an energy state, but we're fast moving toward wind and solar. That it's a lot cleaner, and it's going to be cheaper. And hopefully we can move along, make Louisiana one of the most progressive states in the South when we talk about renewable energy. We need to do that, and it's on our plate. Let me say one thing, though, that we've done at the Public Service Commission that will help people, and it's easy to understand this. We have a tool that we call securitization. It used to be when they had these storms, they paid for putting it back, and they put it in their rate base. Well, the rate base on energy, for example, they make about 9.5% on rate of return. In other words, the money they got invested, they got 9.5% interest on it. That's what they made on it. We now have a situation where we sell bonds, go through the bond commission, and we make sure everything's okay. But these bonds are going to be sold probably less than 3%. So really, it's a great thing. In other words, we give them the money. They put back the structures if it's $1 billion or whatever it's going to be. I'm just guessing. So we'll be able to pay for that at about a 2% rate rather than let them put that in their rate base and make 9% on the money.
All right. 877-217-5757. Alondra says, we've got some inquiries online and off for Foster Campbell. There is time to get in with him today, as you can imagine. We're still front page news across the country. The New York Times has it this way: as hundreds of thousands of people in Louisiana face the prospect of punishingly hot weeks ahead without electricity, officials urge those who fled before the onslaught of Ida to stay away indefinitely as the long slog of recovery begins. While search and rescue efforts wound down in the bayous and small towns of southern Louisiana, the ugly reality of the storm's aftermath, even in places like New Orleans that were spared the worst, was becoming miserably clear. Many of the life-supporting infrastructure elements are not present. They're not operating right now, Governor John Bel Edwards said in his news conference in La Place on Tuesday. If you have already evacuated, do not return. 877-217-5757. If you'd like to pose a question for Foster Campbell, Rinaldi in North Baton Rouge. Rinaldi, you're on the air with Commissioner Campbell. Hi, Rinaldi.
Hi, Commissioner Jim. Commissioner, I voted for you every time, but I'm going to ask a question specifically about solar. Louisiana at one time had one of the most progressive residential solar programs in the country, and the legislature, in their infinite wisdom, cut that back a lot. Wouldn't it'd be better if individual houses had more solar opportunities, both from a climate standpoint and both from a self-efficiency standpoint in situations like this.
I agree. I'm a great proponent of solar on homes, and I thought to make sure that you can do that. The companies, I don't want them to talk about the companies at a funeral. It's almost like we had a funeral today. I don't want to jump on them at a funeral. But the companies have not been so open about solar on rooftops because they want to sell you the electricity. I understand that. But we need to be open to that. And if people want solar on their homes, they ought to be able to have it at a reasonable price. But today's not I don't want to jump on anybody today because I know what they're going through. But solar projects are viable. They are coming to Louisiana, whether we like it or not. I'm a great proponent of it. Now, what is a little bit amazing, some of these companies that sort of didn't like solar on the roof, they're proposing big projects for themselves because they know it's going to be a reliable place to get electricity. It's going to be cheaper. So the bottom line is solar's coming. I am a proponent. I'll do everything I can to make sure that if you want solar on your roof, that you can have it at a reasonable cost. It hadn't always been that easy at the Public Service Commission. We've had a few opponents of solar on the roofs, but I think that argument is pretty much over with now. People realize Louisiana is a great state for solar energy. It's hot here. We have a lot of sun. We ought to capitalize on it.
Jim in University Hills, you're on the air with Foster Campbell. Hi, Jim.
Hey, I sent you a email with a link or with a map in it of the wind path from the Hurricane Center. I don't think it came through, but I'll have a link for you shortly. Look, Mr. Commissioner, I got a call at 11:30 last night from Entergy saying they're on the job doing their thing. I never lost power here. Why are they calling me at 11:30 at night?
I don't have any idea. Excuse me. I don't have any idea why they called you, but I do know this. I know that there are 27,000 people in Louisiana working, and I looked up this morning. Slidell has 27,000 people. So you think about everybody who lives in the city of Slidell is in Louisiana working to try to restore storm damage. So if somebody made a mistake, I don't know. I apologize.
Yeah, I think they've got those mass email blasts. I got one of them as well, and I don't have power. So good luck for you, Jim. It's nice that you do. And it is coming back incrementally, slowly, but let's hope surely. A friend of mine.
I was praising Entergy because they're about one thing. They were one of the first to come out with a email blast or whatever you want to call it, telling you, hey, your electricity's off. Sometimes people are working. And Entergy was the first company that I know of in Louisiana that said, you know, Mr. Campbell, your electricity's off at your house. So that happened 4 or 5 years ago. So they're doing everything they can to tell you about your electricity. And certainly you'd like to know if it's off at your house when you can go home and do whatever you have to do, take care of the refrigerator, et cetera.
Nick writes, is a permanent evacuee from Lake Charles in Baton Rouge. I find it odd that the media is making reference for comparisons to Hurricane Laura, making little reference to Laura, which was just a year ago. I know a lot of my friends in Lake Charles are already feeling forgotten with regard to disaster relief. They were pounded a few times and in horrid ways, and the comeback has been spotty, and the government has not been as receptive to their claims, Foster Campbell. We do have to go to a break, but I'd like your take on what's going on in the fine city of Lake Charles when we return. The number 877-217-5757 for Foster Campbell, and then we'll hear from Dan Moldea on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. In a few moments, Dan Moldea, the world-class reporter joining us from the Beltway, who wrote a book about the assassination of Robert Kennedy, and now Sirhan could be released from jail. We'll talk about that with Dan, who's not happy about that prospect, but we're finishing up with Foster Campbell. And what about Lake Charles, Commissioner Campbell? I think we've lost the commissioner once again for a moment. So, Alondras, let's see if we can get him back in our remaining moments with Foster Campbell. Nick had a good question about Lake Charles, which has just been slammed, and the mayor, Nick Hunter, who's been with us a few times, has been pleading for help, and he hasn't gotten it, and some are pointing fingers at the congressman of that area, Clay Higgins, the flamboyant conservative, former TV star for stations in the Acadiana area. And Foster Campbell, what about Lake Charles? How is that city not getting the attention that, say, Baton Rouge or New Orleans is for storms that happened a year ago?
The question was the gentleman from Lake Charles saying that they're not getting the attention that they should be? I don't know about that. I know that I'm glad to hear it. I'll do everything I can to check into that. I thought they were. People realize what a terrible storm Lake Charles had, almost devastated the whole town. I thought there was a lot of attention, but I don't know about. I have heard about some insurance companies not willing to pay all the claims they should pay, and they were having problems with claims being paid timely and for the right amount. I've heard of that, But I haven't heard. I thought there was all hands on deck to try to help Lake Charles, which is a great part of Louisiana.
All right, but not from the federal government, which is essential. And Foster Campbell, of course, is in a different part, and he's not a congressman. But I'm sure he will look into it, as he does on every inquiry. Dan downtown, you'll be our final caller for Foster Campbell. Hi, Dan. Dan in Baton Rouge. Good morning to you. Dan, are you there? Okay, I think we lost Dan. So we're going to let you go, Foster Campbell, and thank you as always. Hopefully next time we'll talk, things will be better. So pleasure to catch up with you.
Listen, our hopes and prayers go out to everybody down in South Louisiana. We know what you're going through. Anyway, we're going to do everything we can to help and support you. We are one state, and we're crazy. We love South Louisiana just like y'all love us. Anything we can do to help, we're going to do it. We're one great state, Louisiana, and all our people are equal, so we'll do everything we can help.
All right, I think we may have Dan. Oh, we lost Dan, so I lost Dan for good this time. But Foster
right,
Campbell,
you.
Appreciate your devotion to
thank
our
you.
State. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're waiting on Dan Moldea, the intrepid reporter from the Beltway, who has been on the case of Robert Francis Kennedy for many years, the U.S. Senator from New York, brother of former President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, assassinated in Los Angeles, shot in the late hours of June 4th, 1968, at the Ambassador Hotel after winning the California primary, and died a few blocks away from 3400 Wilshire Boulevard at Good Samaritan Hospital about a day later in the early hours of June 6th of 1968, and 53 years actually after the death of Bobby Kennedy, his assassin, Sirhan Sirhan, could be getting out of jail. He has been voted favorably after many no's, this time in California, for parole. And Foster Campbell has left us, but Dan Moldea is with us, and he wrote a definitive book about the assassination of Robert Kennedy and believes firmly that Sirhan Sirhan did it, and interviewed him on at least two occasions. Your thoughts about this latest development, Dan Moldea?
Jim? Best yes. wishes to you. I got to ask you, I mean, it's so horrific what's happened to you good people down there. How are you doing and your staff? Are you guys okay?
We're generally okay. Most of us are without power, but that can be...
And how long? I've been here 10 days to 2 weeks of without power to anticipate
It could even be longer in some cases, but...
And it's like 100 degrees down there, no air conditioning?
That is correct.
Oh, my God. Well, thoughts and prayers, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for dealing with this 20th century situation. Yeah, I mean, Sirhan did it and did it alone. It's a no-brainer. I when I first went into the case in 1986, 87, I guess it was, I thought something else had happened. I thought there was a possibility of a second gunman, and I was in that world for a little bit trying to detail. There was some really persuasive evidence, and it was evidence that the police and the FBI had laid out there. I mean, they kind of had made the case for the second gun themselves not intentionally or anything like that, but just through mistakes, sheer, you know, clerical errors and things like that. And so I went after the second gunman, the guy who was thought, this ex-security guard named Gene Caesar. And I interviewed him for a long, 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 long time, and I finally, you know, polygraphed him. I asked him if he would be willing to take a polygraph test because I needed some test or measurement how much time and money I was going to spend on this guy. So he agreed to the polygraph test. I got the best polygraph operator I could find, the president of the American Polygraph Association, to do the polygraph, and he passed with flying colors. So with him out of the picture, as far as I was concerned, I then turned my sights to Sirhan. I had three interviews with Sirhan at Corcoran State Penitentiary near Fresno in California, and about 14 hours. And at the end of the interviews, which the Newsweek magazine described as chilling, you know, it was very clear that Sirhan had done it and done it alone. And this ridiculous situation that occurred last Friday, where the two members of the parole board have recommended Sirhan for release, has to be stopped. And I'm sure that Gavin Newsom, assuming he's still going to be governor after September 14th, will not allow this to proceed. He had vetoed a recommendation by the parole board in June to release a member of the Manson family. And so I think that setting that precedent, he's going to deny the release of Sirhan as well.
Well, Bobby Kennedy's children are divided on this. I think he had 11 of them. Of course, two of them are deceased now. But most of the family wants Sirhan to stay in prison. But as we know, some others say it's time for him to go, that he's not a harm to society. You followed their statements. What did you think?
Yeah, Sirhan is a very smart guy. I enjoyed my time with him, but he does have a wicked temper, and because I've seen it, because I got on him, I got in his face, and he, I think that temper is still there. Also, you know, if there was mercy to be shown to Sirhan, it was when the Kennedy family, back in the 1960s, early 1970s, recommended that the death penalty be eliminated in the state of California. And because Sirhan, after his 1969 convention, was sentenced to death, he was on death row in San Quentin. And then he, and then they did eliminate the death penalty. The mercy was shown to Sirhan. He was allowed to live. And that was his mercy. The mercy was not now for him to be released from prison. And so, the family, you have Bobby Kennedy Jr., who is the anti-vaccination guy in the midst of a pandemic, and who believes, the craziest theories about the, I'm calling these guys the QAnon-like people of the wacky left. And they have the craziest theory that Sirhan was hypno-programmed to go into the kitchen pantry and where this, to create a diversion by firing blanks, while Gene Caesar, the security guard, who has been for years falsely accused and completely innocent, shot and killed Robert Kennedy. So, the craziness continues. Much of this started, much of this real hostility revolving around this case started as a result of a series of articles in the Washington Post, irresponsible stories.
Patrick in Innisfail Estates, please be brief. Patrick, you're on with Dan Moldea. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. The Kennedys, speaking of the wacky left, they're the ones that support this type of release the criminals from jail. Don't keep them there. They say it's racist to do it. So why should we care? I mean, this is a taste of their own medicine.
That's a nice statement.
Well, I'm a liberal myself, but I acknowledge the fact that there's some crazy people on the far right, but there's also a lot of crazy people on the far left, and I think a lot of them occupy this room. This, like I said, it's like a QAnon like thing that's going on among the pro Sirhan forces, where people like me, who wrote a pretty widely praised book about the Kennedy murder, where Sirhan did it and did it alone, are basically we're being targeted for our heresy, for defamation, for smearing because of our heresy.
Now, another listener notes that John Hinckley, the man who shot Ronald Reagan, is out, and the man who shot George Wallace, Arthur Bremer, is out of jail. Why shouldn't, and of course both of those victims survive, but why should Sirhan be treated differently than those people?
Because once again, he was on death row. He was sentenced to death. There was commuted to life, and that was the mercy that he was shown. And the Kennedy family supported that it was moved from capital punishment to life in prison. Now you have six of the nine children, as you pointed out, two are gone. So you have nine children left. So you have six of the children supporting Sirhan staying in jail. Then you've got RFK Jr., you've got Douglas Kennedy, and then you have Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, the former lieutenant governor of Maryland. You have her sort of like in a limbo land where she kind of supports her brother, RFK Jr., and she is...
Well, we do have to go, Dan, but we'll be calling on you again soon. Be safe. Stay tuned, and Signature Support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting.